You know that I feel like it's important to express yourself. You got to put your true self out there. And those classic Crocs, clogs, and sandals let you do that.
That's right. Between the rainbow of colors and the Jibbitz charms, you can create a unique look. And I mean literally, no one else will have shoes exactly like yours.
Hey, you know it doesn't get any more comfortable than the Croc clogs and sandals. They are just the perfect blend of comfort and creativity.
Visit Crocs.com to explore the latest styles and Jibbitz charms.
All right, ladies, let's be real. Who here actually enjoys shaving their legs? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought so. And get this. Nair, yes, Nair, the OG that I used for years, has now leveled up. And they have these new sensational shower creams and body creams that smell amazing. My personal favorite, coconut oil and vitamin E because it's gentle on my skin. And down to that body cream scent, baby, rich cocoa butter and vitamin E. A modern take on indulgent and classic femininity. Smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
I am exactly who I am because of my father. Deadass.
Hey, I'm Kadeen.
And I'm DeVal.
And we're the Ellises.
You may know us from posting funny videos with our boys.
And reading each other publicly as a form of therapy.
Wait, I make you need therapy?
Most days.
Wow.
Oh, and one more important thing to mention, we're married.
Yes, sir, we are. Mm-hmm. We created this podcast to open dialogue about some of life's most taboo topics.
Things most folks don't want to talk about.
Through the lens of a millennial married couple. Deadass is a term that we say every day. So when we say deadass, we're actually saying facts. 100. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. We about to take pillow talk to a whole new level.
Deadass starts right now.
Story time. I remember being 17 years old and honestly feeling like my father didn't like me. Like, I knew that he loved me, but I remember saying to myself, my father doesn't like me much. And I remember saying to myself, like, dang, what did I do that my father doesn't like me? Because I felt like I was, my whole life, I had tried to do everything I can to make my father proud. So at that point at 17, I said, I'm tired of trying to make my father proud. I'm just going to do what I want. And that's when I started to rebel a little bit. I started to talk back a lot and just make my own decisions. And when I left to go to college, I was so excited about being out the house until I was gone. And then it was in that moment when I got to college and everything my father was trying to teach me and instill in me hit me like a ton of bricks. And I realized, damn, that's why he was the way he was. All right, it's karaoke time. I got my brothers in here, right? So I'm actually gonna sing the song Brothers with my brothers. I'm gonna need y'all to join in. with me, all right? From the Best Man soundtrack, if y'all remember this, all right? So we're going to start from the verse. All right, ready? One, two, three. What can a brother do for me? He can help you up when you are down. What can a brother do for me? He can be my eyes when you can't see. What can a brother do for me? He can help you be the best man I can. I can be.
I can be.
I can be.
Oh, I can be.
I can be.
I can be.
Help you be the best man I can be. Woo! That was terrible. That was terrible. All right, man. I think I drowned y'all out. But welcome. Welcome, guys. Welcome, man. So I'm going to introduce y'all to this very special group of guys here, because this group here became my clan here in California when I moved out here. All right. And I'm going to go in order as the people are watching me here. So we're going to go to my left. We're going to go to Salvin Naeem. Salvin actually put me in my first film. He's an award-winning producer, director, actor, rapper, does everything. Father, husband, got a son now, ex. Shout out. But thank you for joining us. Salvin, I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
To his left is my man, Sir Bafo. Shout out, Brooklyn.
All day.
Coney
know.
Island.
Yes, sir.
Photographer. He's worked on the Lakers, the Chargers, with BET, Will Smith. I mean, you've done a lot of work with a lot of people, bro. A lot of work. You got out here first. You told me years ago, you was like, yo, D, you want to make it? You got to come out to Hollywood. I mean, you said, and Salvin told me the same thing.
It's true.
So, Sir Bafo, I appreciate you
love,
coming out
bro,
here,
love,
man.
My brother.
Yes, and to his left, and last but certainly not least, my new brother from another mother. Lives down the block from me. I ain't going to tell y'all where we live because I don't want nobody rolling up on us.
You exclusive. Know what I'm saying?
It's my man, Rob Devon Butler, former NFL athlete, played safety. He liked to hit people, now works in corporate America. He's a father, husband, also a son. We're all sons, but also father to four beautiful children, two sons and two girls. Rob, thank you for coming and joining us.
Blessings, bro.
I had been struggling so many times with what I was going to do for the men's episode because Kadeen and I always do the podcast together, but last year one of our biggest episodes was the guys episode, and we talked about dating and relationships, and people loved that. But I felt like it was important, especially in today's time, to talk about fatherhood, especially black fathers. And I think it's important because Rob, Slick, and myself, we work out every morning together. And every time we get together, people would think, as men, we would be talking about ass. You think we would be talking about women, but we literally sit there and talk about fatherhood. What are we doing? We ask each other because Rob has the oldest children. He has grown children. So Slick is always asking me questions, but I bring Jackson with me, and I'm like, yo, Rob, how do I deal with this? And then I felt like I should bring Bafo because Bafo was in the space where I feel like if I didn't have kids and I had a group of people that could tell me what to look out for, I could make decisions based on those things, which is going to lead me to a question that I want to know from you guys, right? In story time, I talked about what my father was to me. And I kind of want to hear from each of you what your father was to you guys. Slick?
Well, I have to really think about that because, you know, unfortunately, I didn't have a great relationship with my father until I got married, you know, and then my wife, you know, brought us tried to mend that relationship because she knew that was
that needed work to be done there.
So there was a large gap of years, you know, that that we didn't really talk much or go back and forth. So I have to kind of go back to, you know, my very early years. And what my father was to me was, you know, disciplinary, hard worker, though, you know, self-made. That's, you know, he started his own company.
So he was an example, because clearly that's what you are.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So, yeah, definitely that was one thing. And then just kept progressing in that, you know. Mm-hmm. He completely just did his own thing, you know.
And you're North African.
Yeah, yeah.
And your father is?
But my father is actually white.
Father's white.
Yeah, okay. And my mother is Algerian.
Is Algerian, okay.
So my father came to New York Before I was born, obviously, and met my mom, and you know, they had me over there. But he, they divorced immediately, like after I was born. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't even know how they even got together. It's just to make me.
Right.
And then he went. He moved to Inwood, Washington Heights, 211 Finisham, and that was the hood. That was the Dominican hood. Mm-hmm. So you know, most of my.
That's why I thought you were Spanish.
Yeah, that was. I mean, that was
facts. I was Puerto Rican when he walked in. Yeah. He say from New York.
I'm from Puerto Rican. I called him Slick 33 when I first met him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's been my life in New York, explaining to, you know, Puerto Ricans and Dominicans that I'm not Puerto Rican and Dominican. Right, you know, right. Sometimes I got to say it in Spanish, and then they're like, I'm not Spanish.
Papi.
Mentira, mentira, papi. Right. But so I watched him literally, you know, go from broke as hell, mm-hmm. you know, whack ass whip that was still getting broken into, you know what I mean?
Right.
To, you know, to making something of himself, and you know, being
and that was a good example for you. So yeah. Your father, you would say your father was an example. More than a presence, he was just an example.
Yeah, and he was very present in the early phase. And actually as a baby, what pissed off my mom, because my mom was the worker. My mom was working a 9-to-5, and my father quit his job just to be with me as a baby.
Oh, wow.
And which made my mom mad, because now she's the breadwinner, and she's like, yo, we got these bills or whatever, but my pops would finesse it pretty ill, because he was an engineer before he got into computer software, and would just be able to just do a freelance job and make like $1,200. And then be like, here's the money for just enough, you know, for the bill. And that would piss my mom off even more, because she'd be like, you can make money and you're not doing it.
Right, you know what I mean?
Right. It's funny. I think all fathers learn to finesse. My father was a finesser. He got his associate's degree, didn't go to college after that, was bouncing, and then started working for Chase Manhattan Bank. And then became like, you know, he does computer programming and mainframing. And I used to be like, how do you manage to make money? You don't even have a bachelor's degree. And he's just like, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Like, your dads always know how to finesse.
Sound like him, too.
That sound like Scoop? Bafa, what about your pops?
My dad's pretty awesome, actually. We have a really good relationship, yeah. Growing up, he was around. He was definitely a disciplinary. But I didn't know anything away from discipline, in a sense. Like, I didn't know that was wrong, I guess.
And your father's from Ghana.
Yes, my parents are from Ghana. My dad he was a soccer player in Ghana, left Ghana in the 70s by himself, came to America, came to figure this shit out. And I'm good cursing.
That's yeah, you good cursing. Yeah.
I ain't gonna OD, but, dead you know, ass podcast. Shit like shit. So he came to America in the 70s and just wanted to establish some sort of ground here, which he did. And then he went back and got my mom and my three brothers and brought them over. So for me, seeing that and hearing that story growing up, I mean, I felt like, this man left the country that he was very comfortable and familiar with to go to another country that he had nothing, nobody there, and started a space and started working for himself and started to build a foundation here in America where he was able to bring my family over. So for me, he's like a true example of, like, exactly. You know what I mean, saying some shit I need to be emulating and how I would love for my kids at some point to see their grandfather and know these things about him. So, yeah, it's big.
So that's two things over there I heard. Example, Rob.
Yeah.
You and your father. Now, I met your father. He's been spending the last week with us working out with us in the morning. 57 years old, working out with us young bucks. What was your father to you?
Man, I'm sitting here reflecting as I listen to my brothers that went before me, and the thing that comes to mind for me is, you know, my dad was a role model. He occurred for me as a role model growing up, but what I came to know as a father myself now is that he was a real model. So my dad didn't hold no punches. He didn't hide anything from us. So he showed us the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know. Uh-huh. So I took that. By and large, I said, man, this is not what I'm going to do with my kids, because it's too much.
Right.
But now we're looking back on it, it's like everything that I got to, that you experienced as a young man, especially a young black man growing up in America, my dad put me through it before I got to live through it myself. Mm-hmm. So I kind of already had him as a reference point. Some people would say, well, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. You know, you shouldn't have your first beer or your first this. You shouldn't be talking about sex with you. But my dad was an open book. Aside from that, he one of the things that stand out to me the most is that he always pushed the envelope for more. He wanted me, my brothers, to be better than him.
Okay.
And so I would get straight A's, bro. you know, being a football player, score 5, 6, 7 touchdowns, he want to point out the tackle that I missed.
Missed, right, right.
Or the coverage like that I blown.
Right.
Yeah. And to your point earlier, I always felt like, yo, dude, why can't you never give me my props?
Right, right, right.
And it wasn't until I was 30 years old, this is 9 years ago, we had a conversation about, you know, why would you ride me? How come you never gave me attaboy? He said, son, look, I always felt like you didn't, like, I was never good enough for you. Mm-hmm. He said, son, listen, the reason why I rode you that way is because I saw who you was. Straight A's was the expectation.
Right.
5, 6, 7 touchdowns a game, that's who you was. So, right. So when you fell short of that, it was like I had a problem with it. But when you did it, it was like, that's what I expected out of you. Right. And I finally, I got that.
And you got that at 30.
30.
Yeah, but how did you feel about that?
I let him know how I felt about it. I told him, I communicated to him that I had developed a complex of not being good enough. Uh-huh. So how that showed up in the world was I always strive to overachieve. Yeah. And what was driving was this internal the monologue really between me and me saying that you're not good enough. So there was an impact.
So I'm glad you say that, because where I want to take this conversation is in this current culture, we hear oftentimes, you know, black men don't defend black women. Mm. Black men don't love black women. Black men don't marry black women. These are all the things that we're hearing about black men. And I want to have this conversation because we all had fathers in our lives. And I want to know what happened in our lives that made us be the way we are. And especially in our 20s, when you're in that dating process. Because when you're older and married, it's easy to say now. But we're talking about people who date in their 20s, between 20 and 25. Who were you? How do you think having your father in your life, or if he wasn't in your life at that time, made you be who you were? And if you were that way, would you have dated yourself? How did your father and who he was help you become the man you are, to be a companion for someone else? And this is open floor. This is, you don't got to go in order. I want to hear that. Who were you in your 20s when you were dating?
I was terrible. Yeah. This is Bosco speaking, yeah. Would I date myself in my 20s? Nah, I wouldn't. I was fun, but I wasn't serious. So depending on, you know, I guess the lady or the girl at the time that I was dating, depending on what she wanted, she could get fun, but I wasn't really serious. So when it came to being serious, and like, I settled down towards the back end of, prior to moving to LA, I had a girlfriend for like 3 years. Mm-hmm. But I myself know that, like, if I was a lady, looking at myself at 20, don't get me wrong, I'd be like, damn, he cute, you know what I'm saying? But but I personally would not date myself, because I was selfish. I was very selfish at that young age. Yeah, I was very selfish. I figured I was also selfish. One, I'm the youngest of 7.
Okay,
so
that
we
makes
was wild
sense.
Deep, you know what I'm saying? And I was the last one. And a few things did kind of go my way growing up, but for the most part, I've always felt like I had to, like, even till today sometime, like, they'll be like having sibling discussions, and I might chime in, and they'll be like, oh, Steve, you're young, you know, or,
right,
hey, but, you know, you're young.
They just dismiss you.
Absolutely, till today. So I think I've had that complex growing up of wanting to sit in this, be the same level. When it, like, as I got older now, even when I talk to my mom, I'll be talking to my mom. She's in Ghana now, and I'll talk to them, and I'll be saying things to her, and I'll be like, mom, you know, like, I'm not a kid. I'm grown now, though.
You, right, you got
to
let remind
her. I have to kind of say remind that her. To kind of let her know, like, mom, I'm good. I'm very careful. I'm aware. You know right. what I mean? So, as they say, you know, you're going to forever be their babies, you know, no mm-hmm. matter what. But you're going to forever be their babies when you're also the youngest of many.
And so you being the youngest, that just made you immature and selfish.
Very immature and young.
As
and
a young man.
I would not have, like, I grew up in Coney Island, Brooklyn, Coney Island. That shit's the hood, my guy. Mm-hmm. And if you would have told me then that I lived in the hood,
I wouldn't
have believed you, because I was able to get everything I needed and from wanted. There. If I wanted Jordans,
my parents you could
got
get it. Right.
I needed the new system.
I remember
came out.
Went to high school together.
Right.
You had everything. You was kind of fly.
You know, so it's kind of, to me, like, looking at it, I'm like, I didn't realize the life that I was living. But it also, like I said, I think that all contributes to the fact that I was last born and just feeling this need right. to want to step out and be seen beyond everybody else. And I think it kind of has kept, like, followed me into my adult life in a way where I've taken good out of that, though. I've taken the good bits of that in terms of, like, being seen and being working and just not constantly trying to be better every day. I think that was something that I carried over. I don't know if they knew what they were instilling in me when it was happening, but that shit's in my blood, bro.
I feel you. Slick, I knew Slick in his early 20s. I didn't seen his action.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't date myself. I mean, but yeah, but I go home with myself. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know,
have fun.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the environment that we are in, you know what I mean, the fellas that we grow up with, you know, and you know, it's about, you know, how many bodies, and how many, what you could do, and you know, it's that competition, you know, it's that camaraderie that you go out and you're like, all right, I'm gonna get this and that, and then you know, on top of that, you know, my boy Sam,
Sam, always.
So I had like, he's like an older brother of mine. I was also the youngest, and his job was a doorman.
He was a doorman at the club, bro.
At the biggest clubs
in New York City.
Yeah, in New York City.
Access.
Yes.
So I was going into these clubs when I was 16. So from 16, by the time I was of age, I was like, club. I was like, come on, I know how to maneuver everything. And he was giving me drink tickets too because I couldn't afford the drinks. I was like. So, you know, to me, like when Cash was
you about
like,
to get oh. Sam locked up, yeah. giving drink tickets to minors and shit. What was Sam doing?
Right. Sam was like trying to let you live, boy.
Yeah. And I always like when he give me the tickets, I always feel for the thickness of the stack. You know, and I'd be like, oh, I got a stack today. You know what I mean? And it was so funny too because you know the girls I'd be talking to in the club be like, oh, you're a baby. You must be like 22 or 21. And I'm like, you know, 17. Right, right. I'm like, yeah, you got that right. So you mix that with, you know, growing up in New York and also my mother was a very hard worker, so she wasn't home a lot, you know what I mean?
Right.
Even though she was there for me for anything I needed. So, you know, I had all of the ingredients, you know what I mean, to get reckless, you know, in the city.
Mm. Rob?
You know, I'm thinking about this question. Listen to my brothers. I'm gonna take a different cut on it.
Because you was married young.
I was married young. I got married at 21.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So, you know, at first ask, I would answer the question the way they did. Nah, hell no, nah, I wouldn't date myself. But now I think back to, like, the values that my dad had instilled in me. He had four Fs. Dad, forgive me. I gotta share this with the world.
Share it.
He had four Fs. When it comes to girls, find them, feel them, fuck them. Uh-huh. And forget them.
I knew that was coming.
Shit.
And then I'm like five. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
But
that's right.
So that was the conditioning. But something in my spirit never felt that doesn't feel right.
Right.
Because
right.
It's like if you abide by that philosophy, does that explain why you left my mom when I was two?
Right. Right.
And
right.
I didn't want that.
Yeah.
So I was a wild boy early. So I lost my virginity at 12. So all the buns dudes 12. Was getting in college, I was getting buns in middle school.
Oh, yeah.
So you talked about being exhausted because you was in the club early. Because I started early, I wasn't trying to get another notch under my belt by 18, 19, and 20. Mm-hmm. It was about the connection and the love.
Okay.
So I was a serial monogamous slash cheater. Okay,
mm-hmm. So monogamous slash cheater. That's hilarious.
That's a new joke.
That's a new
joke. He's a hybrid.
Here's the meaning behind it. Like every woman that I dated felt like they was my woman because that's the level of chivalry and care
and giving I gave to them.
I was always a giver.
Because your father was a gentleman.
Yeah, he
taught you how to be.
Bro was smooth.
Yeah,
he was smooth.
He had an agenda. He had an agenda.
I remember when we was talking, he told me, you got treated the right way.
You know what I'm saying? So I never messed with girls to say I did that. I messed with them to be like, I wanted to blow their minds. I want them to love me.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? I wanted to be the best they ever had. That whole thing. So I would definitely date young 20-year-old RDB because he was a good dude.
Yeah.
Right.
But you know, he had some other things he had to work out.
For sure.
You know what's crazy? I've been with Kadeem since I was 18. In my mid-20s, I would not date young DeVal. It's funny when I watch people on social media and even on TV, they be like, oh, this is relationship goals. And I'm like, y'all see relationship goals now, but if y'all knew DeVal and Kadeem in 2006, 2007, you wouldn't be saying the same thing. You know what I'm saying? And,
right.
Necessarily, it wasn't because I was a scumbag. And this is what, you know, brings me to have this conversation. I realized that I didn't understand what it was to be a boyfriend or a fiance or a husband. I just didn't understand because my father never had that conversation with me about what it is to be in a monogamous relationship. This is the conversation me and my pops had about sex. Committed, bro. I said, what? You know I got condoms in my drawer, right? I said, yeah. Good job. That was it, bro.
That's it.
That was it. And here's the thing. My father was a mentor to 30 to 50 other young men in our community. He ran a junior layman in Salem Missionary Baptist Church. But he and I never had that conversation. So, you know, that left me to do what I wanted to do. My brother had a baby at 17. And it's crazy because you mentor all these other young men, but I never really felt like my father was my mentor. So when I was in my 20s, I was being what I thought a man was. And I learned a lot through watching rap videos. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You see chicks, you see a nice chick, you want to smash, you bag. But I did learn from my father and my Uncle Kevin to always respect women. Mm-hmm. So I was never disrespectful.
That's a fact.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
True.
Yeah, I was never, ever disrespectful to women, but I just didn't know how to be monogamous, even though I was trying. You know, and that makes me made me want to ask this question. How do we break that? If we want to raise young men or even raise young women to be in relationships, because you got two daughters. And I always say I want to have a daughter. You don't have kids yet. You have a son. But what now as fathers, we have to start to think about what we didn't learn and how we act. Because we just said, we all said we wouldn't date our 20-year-old selves.
No. Except me.
Except you. You said you would.
Yeah, I definitely would.
But there's women out there who are looking to date. And there's something that I think Rob said that I think women deal with that men don't deal with. Women develop faster, both physically and mentally. So I remember in high school, all the bad chicks in high school that we went to high school with.
Those with the older guys.
With the older dudes.
Yep.
And I'm talking about sophomores. I remember sophomores in high school. Facts. Shorty, you 14.
With a senior.
And you were the senior. He drives.
Right. He got a car. He got,
you know what I'm saying? So they've been dealing with adult issues from 14. Facts. So the time they get to 20, they're like, I'm tired of dealing with kids. Facts. But us as men, we don't get to that point until, like you said, we 25. Now I'm in that position where I can, you know, kind of have fun. And then women are kind of like, well, I had fun from 14 to 20. I'm looking for a husband.
Yeah.
How do we, you know, as fathers, begin to break that for our kids, especially our boys, especially because I know you got two, you got one, I got three. What do we tell our boys?
I mean, personally, I feel like they have to go through the motions. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't, they have to learn a lot on their own. And I wouldn't want to deprive I wouldn't even want my son to be husband material at 18.
Person. Oh, that's fair. I agree with you 100%
on that.
You
know what I'm saying?
I agree with you 100%
on that. Let him go through things, and obviously, you know, respecting women, respecting everybody. You know what I'm saying? It just respect, period, is you know, paramount in raising him. That's what I'm going to do. But I'm going to let him do his thing, you know what I mean? And until, like, you know, until he starts getting serious about somebody and, you know, and I feel like he's super serious about this girl, and then I can have a talk with him and be like, all right, you know.
So we can't put an age on it.
Can I ask something? Is that the same approach if you have a female daughter? Like, if you have a daughter?
That's what I was going to say. What do we tell
energy,
our daughters?
That same energy we put as far as how we feel, you know, we would give, let our son just kind of do him and figure it out. Are we taking that same angle with our daughters, though?
I don't know.
Here's the issue, though. If you telling your son figure it out, he need people to figure it out with.
Right.
So if you're not going to raise your daughter to figure it out, then he's going to end up having to take advantage of someone's daughter who's trying to date deliberately. So and that's where, to me, as fathers, we have to figure out what's good for our children.
Chain reaction.
Because I don't know the answer. Yeah. I say I want a daughter, right? And I say to Kay all the time, man, when we have this girl, you're going to have to do this because I don't know what to say. Because I'm telling my boys, like, Slick, I say, listen, you can't go into life thinking I'm going to be someone's husband until you explore a little bit.
That's right.
You have to. You have to know what you like and what you don't like.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that just applies for women, too, though. Maybe that just applies. You have to explore and just decide what you want. Like, no? Does it not
I'm cool with it. I'm cool with it, but I don't know if it's misogynistic for me to tell a woman to go out there and have fun with different guys until you figure it out because— You know what I'm saying? How do we as fathers have that conversation with our daughters?
I don't have any kids.
Yeah.
You know, but I personally wouldn't say go out and have fun even to my son. I wouldn't be like, go out and just have fun. No, I would just kind of, I feel like it's just all in conversation and just things that he's experienced. Hopefully, I'm at a level with my son where he's comfortable to at least just talk to me. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
Your child has to be able to come and want to talk to you, you know? So if he's able to talk to me, I feel like then he can put trust in me to tell me stuff and I can kind of veer and guide him through the process and not necessarily say, yo, go out and knock down 50 girls and then get that out your system and then get married. No.
I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Like, kind of put the path a little bit for him, help him pick that.
Well, Rob, your daughter.
But it's the relationship, though.
Yeah, Rob has daughters.
Your daughter just turned 21.
Oh, yeah.
Bro. What are those conversations like,
please,
my guy?
I'm curious to hear.
You're going to be a good dad, bro.
Oh, I'm going to be a good dad?
You're going to be a good dad.
My bro. Man.
So hey, here's ladies. The thing. Since you framed the question, I got to thinking. You've asked the question, I get to thinking about shit introspectively, right? So there's a difference. The conversation with my sons is twofold. Mm. On one hand, it's idealistic. Listen, sex is for marriage. It's sacred. You know,
right. this, of course,
the whole, that's you know, yeah, the yes, ideal. Totally. Yes, and then it's yes. okay, but let me keep it 100 with you. You're gonna get the itch. You're gonna have this dream before the dream occurs, so that they're not taken right. aback by that.
Right, but when
they
happens,
wake up in this, you know, yeah, mucus yeah. all in their drawers, it's like, what? Yeah. I'm dying. You know what I mean?
Right.
No, that's part of the process.
Right,
son.
You gotta talk through
yeah,
it.
Welcome. So I prepared them for it. You know, we did the whole condoms in the banana joint. Now I did it. Now
did
you gotta do
cousin.
It. Now you demonstrate it. Mm-hmm. So there's this duality, ideal versus reality, like the real world that I have with my sons. Conversely, with my daughter, there was only one part. There was no duality. It was just all idealism, right? You don't give it away. No one's worthy of it. You're gonna get a disease. You're gonna get pregnant.
Right.
Wait till you're married. That's the end of conversation. What happens is, Some little slickster.
A guy that's kind of like a little boffo.
Pulls up, sweet talking, smooth talking, you know, 12th grade, trying to mack on my 9th grade daughter. And now I'm forced to have the conversation yeah. before she gets taught by the streets. And so the answer yeah. to the question is, I think for me, I would have the conversation with my daughter in the same vein I had it with my sons. We would have talked about birth control and condoms and things of that nature. I'm always
that's
giving her
new.
The game. Yeah, I would like
that's
looking
new,
back.
You know they don't. That's traditional people.
Yeah,
you do not talk about sex with your daughters.
That's right. Yeah.
That's like new parents. That's millennial.
That's millennial.
That's millennial parenting. But I understand why.
Yeah.
You would, because I think, and I don't know, is it our responsibility as fathers? Or does that fall on the mom? Because I remember T.I. got a lot of flack because he said that he'd take his daughter to the GYN to check and see if her hymen's still in place. Now, I think that was a little bit too far. I think certain things, especially for a teenage girl, mom can do that. But I do know that fathers have a responsibility to be something to the daughters that is missing in society. You know what I'm saying? Like, we have a responsibility, and I think it's unfair for us sometimes to be like, you know what, I'm not doing it. So I'm trying to figure out with you guys, how do we figure out what it is?
I definitely, for my daughter, I definitely want to be the thing that that fulfills her want for stuff. So she's not wanting from somewhere else, if that makes sense. So
that like, makes sense, yeah.
Just her, whatever she needs. Because my biggest thing, I even just growing up thinking about how me and my sister grew up. Me and my sister 4 years apart. And there are things that she might have wanted. But because obviously my parents are OD strict, well, my dad at least, he wasn't with the shit. So she wasn't going to go out and get it. But I could see how if the parent is at least kind of like, I want to say, do good and then you get good type thing. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? To build that relationship with my daughter, at least so now I know that I'm able to give her things that she doesn't necessarily, that no guy can't impress her with stuff outside of the crib type energy.
I see what you mean.
Know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
whatever, I'm able to provide her with some things where she's not like, I'm lacking this at home already, or I've never seen this, so this is new and it's amazing to me, so therefore I got to be like, just all over this particular individual
right.
because of. So, for me, it's just really just letting her get familiar with having. So
then I start searching for it.
Right, 100%.
I will add to that.
Talk to me.
In that you talk about, you know, the role of a man in rearing a daughter. I think that every child should have male and female energy, and therefore male and female
perspectives. Absolutely.
In that rearing. So I... Honestly, my wife is such an idealist that she couldn't deal with the real world conversation with any of the kids. Mm. So then I had to be a buffer between the ideal and then reality. So our daughter, our 21-year-old, actually she'd come to me first. But in an ideal world, I think mom should be the one to have that keep it 100 conversation from the female perspective.
For sure.
Now I understand what you're saying because that leads me to my next question. We understand that there's a duality between raising a boy and raising a girl, but as a father, you also have to learn to defer. Even though in my household, it is a known fact that I consider myself the leader in my household. Now, that doesn't mean as the leader, I know all. I know as a leader when to defer because my wife knows more, right? When do we defer to our wives or the mother of our children with raising our boys? Because we often, as fathers, feel like we know how to raise boys. You don't tell me how to raise my son. But we just made it very clear here that there is a responsibility for a father with raising a daughter. Should we do a better job of having our mothers involved with raising our sons?
Absolutely, right? I mean,
because you were raised by your mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I think it actually is, it goes twofold, right? Because I feel like when you have a daughter, if you're this role model and this kind of, you know, figure that you're showing her what a good man is, you know what I mean, and what a good man should be, you would think that that's what they would get attracted to.
Right.
Right. Because that's on the flip side, you know, that's what my mom was. And so if I was going to marry someone
like your mom,
I'm going to marry someone, you know, like my mom.
They do say that, though. A boy's first crush is his mom. They say that. It sounds creepy, but that's the truth. Right. I hear you.
Yeah. So, you know, I ended up marrying an Arab woman with similar principles, you know, for the most part. And knowing that she's already an amazing mother. So is that, I mean, those things are, you know, I feel like are, you know, paramount for, you know, sculpting what your child is going to be attracted to, you know what I mean? And hopefully end up with, you know, for forever.
Bof. Cause here's my thing. Cause once we answer this question, I have a follow-up question. Now that we understand the duality between raising boys and girls, we understand the importance of having a father figure in the role of our daughters. But as fathers, oftentimes, we push mothers aside when raising our sons because we feel like I'm a man, I know how to raise a man. Speak to the importance, now that we've already discussed the importance of a father in a daughter's life, of having a mother help raise your son.
To be honest.
And how that was with you in your house.
Yeah, I was with my mother 95% of the time, actually, to be honest. Like, my dad came home. He was gone all day at work. He'd come home at nighttime. I'd see him for the time that I was up until he says, time to go to bed. And that was the relationship as far as, like, seeing and just being around him all the time. Of course, you got weekends and, you know, things like that. You go hang out with him on church and all that other stuff. But for the most part, Monday through Friday, it was me and Mom Duke. So a lot of my stuff, like, everything that I've kind of learned. Like, for example, I never had a sex talk with my parents. Never. Not once. Mm-hmm. Never. I mean, it was probably just too taboo for them even, you know? Because them being foreigners, older foreigners from Ghana, like, just to come back and be here, I think they felt that was probably, to be honest, maybe like a custom that was more Western, like a Western custom.
To have that conversation?
Right. You know what I mean? Because, so I never had that conversation with my parents about sex, period. You know, just kind of like trial and error, figure it out, just make sure you wear a condom, you know, kind of thing. Just having conversations with friends, watching things on TV. To answer your question, the dad's role is super important. But in my case, my dad was there, but I feel like I learned a lot more from my mother, though. You know, like somebody said to me one time, he was like, he said, it's super important to have, like, a dad around, you know? And I was like, no, absolutely. He's like, you know, just the little things, like when you go to the bathroom and you take a piss, you know what I mean? Like how you dangle your dick to let that drip, you know? Just make sure you're not putting the pissy dick tip in the back of the underwear. You know what I'm saying?
But that's something men know, though.
Right.
I got 100%. Two kids potty training, so little things.
And I feel like that's something that a lady technically wouldn't know to have to dangle the dick to...
I feel you.
Right, you know, so...
Those last drips.
Right, the last drips. You don't want to stay in the undies. And back then, we used to wear the tidy whities, and you know what I'm saying? Right, all bad. But so a lot of my learning, I learned from my mother. So in addition to learning from my mother, I also, like I said, I had older brothers. So my older brothers who lived with me kind of put me on game and just kind of schooled me, cousins and all that. But a lot of my manly learnings, I guess, I didn't really... Honestly, I learned how to treat a woman, of course, and I've seen how my dad treat my mom. So that in itself, like, my parents been together 50 plus years, bro.
It
like,
was enough.
That is my mom's first and last. You know what I'm saying? My mom never been with no other guy but my dad. So they've been together forever. So I have a brother that's 50. So that lets me know that they've been together even right for a minute. So I know that their practices, now that I'm older, some of it I won't practice with my kids, but a lot of it was good. But there were, you know, like I say, there's just some things that you just kind of gotta bury as you get older, as far as like ways they might have raised you, things they might have said while raising. You just kind of gotta bury some of those and know that that's not something that I want to put my child through, or just, you know, say to my kids when their things are going bad or some shit.
So I have a question for Rob, because you got married at
21.
You've been with Courtney for how long?
Be 20 years.
20 years, right?
Amen, bro.
Yeah, when we were,
appreciate it.
That is love.
Yeah.
When we were all in that dating process, right? As now, because you weren't fathers in, were you thinking about this woman might be the mother to my kids when you were dating and going through these processes? Or was it just like, I'm going to smash?
Oh, you knew.
Nah, so my girl was my friend first. We were like homies.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point about, you know, the impact of a woman or a mom in the life of boys, my mom was my model for womanhood, just as my dad was my model for maleness. So in my mind, a woman worked, a woman still cooked and still cleaned and still tended to the children. That's my mom is a single
that's
mom.
What saw,
that's, what, that's what she did. So when my wife showed up, she was the strongest woman that I've ever met aside from my mom. So I dated other girls before, but they would break down. It was kind of weak.
Yeah.
But my wife, so I started to see these qualities. I wasn't intentional about it because, again, we was homies. But I began to see these qualities. I'm like, yo. After like 6 months of friendship, I was like, she got everything that I want in a woman.
It's like a movie, a real movie.
It is. Yeah. It is like all a the movie. Time. Yeah.
I had a girlfriend.
The best.
High school sweetheart was a track star at Ohio State. So, you know, but this you know, love interest, this friendship became a love interest. And to your point, when I made her my girl, I knew, like, when I told her you my girl, I knew it was over.
How old were you again at that age?
I was 18, 19 at that time.
Man, that's serious.
I knew.
I'm thinking at
that's
18.
That's mad serious,
18,
bro.
I mean, think about it. 18, you're what, in college? Going into college at sometimes? Right. So
19, I was a junior. I was
right, so in some cases, folks is trying to figure out what they want to do as far as career-wise even, you know what I mean? And I'm here I am making a real decision at 21 or 18 to say I want to marry. That's real. And y'all together now, so you know what?
But Bob, I asked him. I said, you weren't scared at 18?
That's what I'm thinking.
Because Courtney also had a child when they met.
Yeah,
so I was like, you wasn't afraid to be a stepfather at 18? Yeah. Like, what was going through your mind?
That's a good point.
Because at 18, I wasn't thinking about even being a boyfriend to anybody. I told Kadeem verbatim. I'm like, I'm not trying to do this. I said, you're perfect. I think you're perfect. If I could have things my way, and this is going to sound misogynistic, but I said, I would put you in a glass case on the side.
Until I get ready.
We all think that. We've all had that conversation.
And men think
before.
That. Men think that. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Men think that. And I felt like I wanted to. And then this is what Kay said. Kay said, I'm not fucking doing that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
He's sitting
so
his
I
glass.
Was like, oh, shit. I was like, I guess I got to try this monogamy thing. Yeah. You know, and I end up trying it until we get married, and now we have three kids and this life. But it makes me think about all the things. And the reason why I wanted to have this discussion with you guys is because I think women and other men who don't have father figures need to hear the thought process for men as we're going through the dating process.
100%.
We've already all admitted that we wouldn't have dated ourselves if I was a single woman, except for
send
Rob.
Me.
And the thing is, you proved that because you got married at 21.
That's true.
Yeah, for sure.
And you've been married.
It makes
sense. I've worked through everything, which shows that you have longevity.
Right.
You know, but I wouldn't have married myself in my 20s. We all talked about looking for women who remind us of our wives.
Mm.
Only one that didn't say that was Bafo because you haven't found Mrs. Wright yet.
No.
But we all say
moms,
that in way.
Remind us of our moms.
Because we've all found someone to remind us of our moms. And also, finding a woman that can be a good mom to our kids.
Yeah.
Like, these are the thought processes
facts.
As men of when we start to date seriously.
Right?
So I have one final question. Now that we know all of this, how do you think you can father? What's the best way to father? Like knowing everything you know now, what would be the best way? You have the woman that you want to live the rest of your life with. You have kids. What would you say would be your things that, you know, in order for me to be considered a good father, I would do these things. I would instill these qualities, and I would behave this way. I'll start. For me, it would be creating a safe space for my kids first so that they can be exactly who they are.
Yeah.
Right, and I'm going to say something right now that's going to sound crazy, especially from where we came from, because we grew up in Brooklyn during the 90s where homosexuality was like, you couldn't even, if someone said anything to you, you would be pissed off.
Wow.
Now that I have kids, I can tell you right now, if one of my kids came to me and said that he was gay, homosexual, I'd be cool with it.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up,
oh, no, we weren't cool with that.
I never thought that that would be what it was.
Yeah, right.
But when you learn to love someone unconditionally and you have kids and you can see in their eyes who they really are, you start to realize as a parent that it doesn't matter what their sexual orientation is, who, what God they pray to.
Mm-hmm.
This is my son or my daughter.
Right.
So the first thing I would say is create a safe space so my kids can be exactly who they want to be.
Agreed.
All the time.
Yep. I agree.
The second thing I would say, and this is the last thing, is that I would find a mate that would be able to parent with the same vigor for parenthood that I have.
Yeah.
because it's unfair for my kids to only have one. You know, if this is a parent, if this is a partnership,
right.
I would want someone who is just as invigorated by it, and I would want that person to just be as excited every morning to wake up about parenting. Yeah. How we parent is going to change, because I know things in my house are going to be different from things in your house.
Totally,
things different in your house, things different in your house. But I know that those two things matter the most to me.
Yeah, totally.
What y'all think?
I mean, yeah, I agree completely. I think, you know, leading by example, you know, first and foremost, and making sure that, like you said, there's a safe place for them to be comfortable. And I feel like making sure that they don't only see you as a parent, but a best friend, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, like I see you with Jax, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel like you guys have that relationship, and I feel like that's crucial, you know what I mean? Because if they feel like they can come to you with anything, then, like, that's the foundation of a good parenting, you know what I mean? Because now you know what they're feeling. You can really help guide them, you know what I mean? And you're not going to, you know, implement, you know, your way of thinking or, you know, the way you want them to be, you know what I mean? You can hear how they're feeling and hear exactly where their mental state is at and be able to just help them be who they want to be,
right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, rather than shifting them the way you want to be or whatever. Like you said, like, you know, if one of your kids said, hey, I'm homosexual or whatever, at least you know that, you know, they were comfortable enough
telling you that, and that's important.
Yeah, to tell you that. So now you can help guide them, you know, to be, you know, the best person they can be with that sexual orientation, you know, so they're not reckless or not, you know, or not knowing what to do or not angry or not, you know, projecting the opposite on somebody. You know, there's people who are bullied, who are homos that are bullying, you know, other homos because they're scared to come out of the closet themselves. You know what I mean?
Now, it's funny you say that, because I have a homeboy mm-hmm. whose son, and he asked me, this is how all these things happen, because the whole paradigm is shifting. Mm-hmm. He's a black man, and he said, my son is gay. I know he's gay, but he hasn't come out and told me yet because he's afraid. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to bring it to him because that's his to tell. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to endanger our peace in our home because he feels like I was snooping or spying. But his son is very aggressive. Mm-hmm. And his son got into a fight in school because a dude called him the F word. Mm. So he beat the dude. Now this kid plays football.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he's a big kid.
Yeah.
But he's like, DeVal, how do I present to my son that I love him regardless? How do I? And this is a dude that, like me, was an alpha male. And I'll honestly say, when I was growing up, saying the F word was like anything else. It was like saying the N word. Yeah. Like, you didn't realize the impact it had on people.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I'm saying? You didn't have it. So he used to throw it around. Like, it was nothing. And he was like, I didn't realize until I got older and I had kids. And then he said something to me that was so eye-opening to me. He said, DeVal, I look at my son and I can tell that my son is struggling because my son feels like if he wouldn't have chose this if he had a choice.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't feel like he has a choice.
Wow.
And he's gay.
Yeah.
And he said, as a father, it made me realize that who am I to judge someone who doesn't have a choice on who they love? That's who he loves.
Agree.
And when you have a son, like, it's unconditional.
Yeah.
He said, DeVal, I never thought in a million years. He said, I look at my son and I just want to hug him.
Yeah.
But he said, what do I do? What do I tell him? So I'm asking y'all for advice.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what to tell him. Because I was just like, you know, tell him that you know. But then I'm thinking, like, no, you can't tell him that, because then he's going to want to know how you know. Were you snooping on me? Am I giving off something that shows that? Oh, my God, everyone knows.
Right.
You know, and then I was like, well, do you wait for him to tell you and let these things happen? So what do y'all think he should do?
I would engage in, first of all, you talked about creating a safe space.
Yeah.
That's imperative. But I would engage in a line of questioning that led to that at least gave him the space for the truth to emerge.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like, I ain't gonna lie to you. I had a conversation with my oldest. My oldest would never bring girls around. You know, he's pretty. Like, he's a good looking man. You know, he's like that dude. He's like Prince. Like, he Prince pretty. You know what I mean? And I'm like,
don't
yo,
his eyes.
Yo, if there's anybody, like, and there's homosexuality latent throughout my family on both sides, every generation. So I'm like, yo, he's our generation. So I asked him a series of questions because he never talked about girls, never brought any girls around, and he was just he's private in that area of his life. And so I was like, you know, first it started off as, you talking to any girls at school? You know, you got any interest in girls? Sonny?
Right. Not subtle at all.
More than one?
A bunch?
Somebody? Anybody? And then you kind of let him, divulge or not. And then you say, you know, whatever it is that you're dealing with, this is the thing, whatever it is that you're dealing with, there's no conversation and no life experience that you can have that you can't have with me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I said these things to him, you know, mm-hmm. and he was kind of like looking at me like I had three eyes. Like, he was like, this is a true story. He's like, Dad, do you think I'm gay?
Oh, so you weren't subtle at all.
I was leaving any girls.
There was no subtlety.
I was capital S.
When he noticed, he was like, nah. He's like, nah, man. He laughed like, nah, man. Dad.
Like, I'm focused, man.
I'm just saying.
Right.
I'm just saying.
I'm books.
So just, I think there's no other way to. I don't think you should wait for the son to bring it to you.
I agree, though.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I would definitely, I would have a conversation for sure. I mean, because I just know, like, how I was raised, like, it's not really sugarcoat. And not saying, we're not, obviously, there's very tactful ways of, you know, having that conversation. I will be as tactful and unaggressive, I guess, or just without him feeling attacked or she feeling attacked that I'm asking and having this conversation with them. But the most important thing for me definitely is the safe space to communicate and see me as the uncle or the father or whoever, but know that, like, my niece and nephews, like, they call me the cool uncle. That lets me, like, so they come and they talk to me about things, you know, like, I'll randomly be home and I'll get calls from my nieces who are not calling their dad or their mom to ask questions, but they're asking me,
you know what I mean?
I think giving off that comfort to the child that they can talk to you without impunity, you know, like talk to you without any without any sort of like feeling like my dad's going to judge me or he might look at me sideways or I might actually even get in trouble for the fact that I'm telling my dad I'm gay. Nah, you just kind of got to allow that conversation to happen. If I see it, like, this is the thing. Like, growing up, there was definitely kids growing up in my neighborhood when I grew up, and they'd be like, oh, him? Yeah, he gay.
He's gay.
And this is when we were little.
And you knew it.
And as they got older, now when I go home, these guys are gay, you know? Like, most of them, actually. I'm not going to lie. Like, if there was 10 guys that when we were growing up, they pointed them out and was like, yo, I think he's such and such. And now when I go back home, those 10 guys are all what they said they were going to be. You know, people said
they
were.
I remember one in particular. You and I know he played football. Oh. He played football. He played quarterback. He's from Coney Island.
I already know what you're talking about.
And he is now.
Yeah.
And it's funny that you say
that.
You
see it at a young age.
You see the young age.
Definitely see it at a young age. Definitely.
For sure.
We all have that radar. You know,
absolutely. That sense. That little spider sense goes.
But you know what's crazy? Because of generational trauma, and we did a whole episode on generational trauma, it is. Can you imagine living a life where you can't be yourself?
It's tough.
Imagine living a life where you're in your home.
With your parents.
Yeah. The people who are supposed to love you unconditionally and you can't be yourself.
Yeah.
And the reason why this is important, because as Black fathers, right, I think it is important that we change the dynamic and people thinking that gay bashing or homophobia is okay in the Black community and we accept it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I, for one, don't. Like, I just don't.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, people are allowed to think whatever they believe in. You know, people who believe in God and Christianity will come to you and say, well, the Bible says that.
Right.
There's so many people in the Bible doing things and sinning and doing so many things
on a daily basis.
Things.
You know what I'm saying? The craziest things.
We
could definitely nitpick.
We can nitpick if we want to do that. But as a father, I think it's important for people to hear that if you have a child who may be struggling with this, because I don't know if people know this now, but the suicide rate amongst homosexual boys and girls in the country has risen, especially during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And it's always been high against African Americans because they've always felt like they haven't been accepted.
They suppressed that for so long.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
And as fathers, I think it's on us to be like, yo, you are free to be who you are.
Yeah.
You are free to be who you are and we can accept it. And we can guide you through that aspect of your life the same way I would guide my heterosexual son or daughter through their life.
Right.
Because and this is another thing I said, just because you're homosexual don't mean you can go out there and just do whatever you want to do.
Right.
I wouldn't let my heterosexual son and daughter just do whatever they want to do.
Right.
So what I would do is guide you
the
same way. And this conversation I've listened to tons of podcasts about fatherhood and we always address fatherhood with mother, father, you know, son, daughter, traditional, and we're just forgetting about a group of people who have never been acknowledged. And I think that we should change that. And that's why the thing is, and I want everyone to listen to this. When I went through the questions, I never said to these men that we were going to discuss this.
No.
So this wasn't a planned thing where we all came here and said we're going to say this.
No.
It wasn't planned, and I didn't want it to be planned because I wanted it to be genuine, and I want people to understand that us as men are evolving, especially as black men. Yeah. We're continuing to evolve and learn about each other and learn about everyone. So
I feel like we're the last of that quote unquote like toxic generation. When I say toxic, meaning like, I mean, we grew up in the era, we grew up in the 90s, you feel me? So we grew up where men had to be wild, masculine, and macho, you know, like you can't really show signs of weakness. I feel like we're the last of that batch. After we get out, men are like allowed to cry, you know, in a sense.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Men are allowed to feel some way. Like, it's okay to have feelings in a sense, you know what I mean? And I think that's so important as we phase out our, like, we're phasing out ourselves in a sense, you know, like we're phasing out the way we were brought in, and we're allowing this new path, this new brainwave to kind of move in and be the new quote unquote norm, as they say, you know, the new way to have kids and a new way to approach your family, you know, things of that nature. So you know, we're the last of a dying breed, as they say, I guess, right?
Like, I just want to make a distinction before we move off this topic and you wrap us up, Deval. We spoke about homosexuality in the context of people who don't have a choice. Something happens in the womb and during the gestational period, chemicalization or the effeminization of males, and where the testosterone and the estrogen levels, that all happens in the womb. There's a whole spectrum.
There's a whole science.
There's a whole science to it. But there's also people who just flat out choose to be homosexual because
that's what they like and prefer.
That's what they like.
Yeah, yeah, for
that's
sure.
That's what they prefer.
I would put preference. Yeah. I would put those people in the same boat as the people who were born that way, to me.
That's fair. No, I agree. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Not to say, well, if you if you're born this way, it's cool. If you choose it and it's not.
You're right.
You're right. That's I think that's right.
Because a preference is still, I mean, a preference is your choice. And ultimately, like, and I don't think you should fault me for not liking to eat beef, hypothetically, if that's the thing.
That is a good analogy.
You know what I mean?
That is a good analogy.
I don't eat beef. That's I don't eat it. I don't think you should look at me sideways for that, though.
That's a good, that's a good analogy.
So, yeah.
That's a good analogy.
Preference, baby.
Gentlemen, I appreciate you, but we're not done yet. We're not done yet. Before we come back with listener letters, we're going to take a quick break. We got to pay some bills. All right, but we'll come right back with the listener letters. Kadeem's not here, so I'm going to do the listener letters.
Pay
we'll
some
right
meters, back. Too. Pay
oh,
some
shoot,
meters.
We do got to pay the meters. Bafo about to get told. Yeah, we definitely got to pay some bills. We'll be right back.
Holla.
Hey, what's good, y'all? I think it's important for you to understand why black representation in media is important. It's important because the media represents how people view us. And it's important that they understand that black people are not a monolithic people.
That is a fact. And the next generation of influential black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truth.
Black Stories, Black Truth is a celebration of blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the black experience itself. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be black today, told from a unique black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of black stories, black truths.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story.
In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the black experience.
Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Y'all, let me tell you, after the Love Against the World tour, my social battery is depleted, drained, no energy. How do you feel, babe?
I don't know. You know, it can be easy for people to ignore their social battery and spread themselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up one after another in the wintertime.
That's a fact. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge after that? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time like me.
You know what? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/deadass today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/deadass. During the break, let's quickly talk about a couple things that are important to most people I know. Comfort and style. Crocs, classic clogs, and sandals have both covered.
When I'm talking about style, I mean personal style. There are just so many colors and so many Jibbitz charms that you can add to the Crocs to make them unique. You can dress up your Crocs to match your mood, to match your personality, to fit the occasion, and you can change them up day to day.
I mean, ultimately, you can stand out from the crowd in a way that only you can because it's your personal style. And now, let's talk about comfort. You know, it doesn't get better than Crocs, clogs, and sandals when it comes to being comfortable. Style and comfort are usually a trade-off, but here, they're a package deal. It's like you have cushions on your feet. Soft, stylish, personalized, colorful cushions.
That's right. So why wait? Head over to Crocs.com today and experience the comfort and style of Crocs classic clogs and sandals for yourself. Your feet will thank you.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
All right, now we're back. All right, we had to go pay some bills. Slick went to go put some money in the meter, so he ain't get no ticket. All right, I think Kay just took the car from me, told me to hitch a ride home. So one of y'all gonna have
I got
to
you.
Get me. You got me, Robert?
I got you, bro.
So we went to listener letters. This is where people, they email in, ask us for some advice. So Kadena's not here, so it's going to be the advice from the guys today. So we're going to take one listener letter. Here we go. We're going to try our best, all right? First off, I just want to say the value truly inspired me to be a better husband to my wife. Oh, I appreciate that, bro, and father to my sons. Just wanted to know if you had any advice on fatherhood. I have a 3-year-old and a 2-week-old, and I feel that due to not having any good examples of being a good father, I'm unequipped to give them the tools to be upstanding men. Any help is appreciated. Mm, you got two sons. You got a son. You grew up with a father. I got three sons. What's some good advice? Let's everybody just give him one tip.
One tip. Here we go. I hear that a lot. And what's that? It's that I didn't have an example or a proper example, so I don't know how to. Let's just keep it a buck.
You know how to.
After the age of 13. Let's just, bro. Let's
not
let the,
bad.
We yes. can't let the nigga off the hook.
Right, right. Yeah.
Pardon my language, but no, bro. If you a grown ass man, you didn't
that's
have to
fair,
have
bro.
A dad. You
that's
didn't have
fair.
To. You have you watch TV.
Yeah. That's fair.
My thing to him is this: get a good vision.
Yeah,
you creative. Get a good vision of what an ideal dad looks like, and then you work your ass off to exceed that vision.
Yeah.
Draw influences from DeVal. Mm-hmm. Draw influences from old reruns of The Cosbys. Like
right,
I don't
right,
know,
right.
Uncle Phil.
Yeah.
Like
Uncle Phil.
You
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like
Paul
there's Winslow. A call. Come on, yeah. man.
Even watch Good Times.
Good
so
Times.
You know how not to be as far
right,
as a father
right,
goes.
Right,
you know
right,
what I'm
right.
saying?
Right. Come
that's
on,
true.
Man.
That's true. That's true.
Like, can we just dare? Like, we got cancel culture. So let's just cancel. I didn't have, so I don't know how to X. I didn't have X, so I don't know how to X.
Rob, I could rock with that.
Yeah, I could rock with that.
Yeah, that's my 2 cents.
Buff.
I definitely agree with Rob. I mean, he took my answer. He took my answer, Rob.
Great minds think alike, bro.
I know, absolutely.
Safety's in the building.
Advice for the brother. How old are the children?
He said he has kids are 3 and 2 weeks old.
I mean, my thing really, to be honest, like, I would say just stay present, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what just in all forms of presence, meaning like attention, meaning like just being there. You know, because being there doesn't necessarily mean that you're present. So
right.
you mm-hmm. we're definitely present in a sense of constantly just even just watching the kids,
mm-hmm.
like looking at them every, like devoting time. Because I have nieces and nephews. So there are times, you know, I'm hanging out with them. My sister might dip off and, you know, watch them for a bit. And
mm-hmm.
I have to sit there and now change. I'm not just, I'm Uncle Boff, but I'm also like, you're kind of like the parent right now, Bob.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure that they good while she's gone.
right,
you know?
Right, right.
I remember one time I was
right.
going to the movie theater. I went to the movie theaters with my niece and nephew, and I took my niece out the car. And I took my nephew out the car. When I turned around, my nephew was gone. When I in that moment, the feeling that I had in my chest, like that, it was like an instant anxiety, fear, like, oh my God, where's
yeah.
the kid at? Feeling
yeah.
like
yeah.
just him not being present
yeah.
in that
right.
moment.
Been there before.
Bro, but he was around the other side of the car. So he was just kind
of
like, at that moment, I felt like it's such my duty to make sure that these kids are, one, well, and that they know that if some shit went down, Uncle's you know, uncle's right behind me and he's going to take care of me and, you know, protect me. Sorry.
Right.
So, yeah, I would say definitely being present all the time. And, I mean, their kids, they're 3 and some months old. So, yeah, you got to be very present, bro.
There you go. Solomon.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, definitely agree with what y'all said. But it goes back to what I said earlier about not just being a parent, but being their friend, too. Making sure that making sure that they know that you are a friend as well as, you know, a parent.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, there's boundaries and respect that needs to be had because you're not just a friend.
Right, absolutely.
But yeah, they need to be, you know, you need to be able to navigate both, you know, being a father and a friend to them.
So here's my thing, because all of you are right, but there's one key component that I think that we often miss as a father, which is being a very good companion to their mom. Because I think people don't understand that the emotions and the feeling that in the sense that they get from their mom is never going to go away, that connection, especially if they're still young.
Right.
I learned from Cairo because I used to speak to Kadeen's stomach all the time. When I walked in the room and I just started talking, when he was about a week old, his head used to turn to the direction because he's used to hearing that voice.
Yeah.
And then with Kaz, whenever me and Cairo started talking, his head always turned. So you become a father in utero.
Come on, DeVal. You heard me say utero.
So,
come on.
That continues throughout parenthood.
Yeah.
The more you pour into their mom and make her feel special, those essence, that feeling, and men sometimes don't want to hear it, but you're not going to be first no more, bro.
Yeah.
You know, your wife is, or your girl, or your child's mother is going to wake up in the morning. The first thing on her mind is going to be those children.
Yeah.
So that's facts.
If you know, how old is X? 8 months?
9 months, yeah.
9 months.
Yeah, it's fresh.
So when you wake up and you make sure she's good,
right,
she'll make sure the kids are good. And that's important because all the stresses you cause are going to roll down to those children, even if you're not causing the stresses yourself. So
what about the single dads, though?
Oh, the single dads?
Mm.
Listen, if I was a single dad right now, I would learn how to balance between providing and being present. Because that's the biggest thing I hear from 100%. Single dads. Single dads all the time say, you know, well, I got to be there, but I also got to provide.
Right.
And there's a balance.
Yeah.
You have to choose when is the right time to provide. And sometimes, and I did this recently, presence is more important than presence, which means that you got to be here. You may not be able to get them Jordans this month.
Right.
But if I made every single one of his games,
I'm here.
He'll feel better.
100%.
So it's understanding the balance as a single dad and knowing that you got to be there.
That's real.
I would add to that this, as a single, my dad, well, he wasn't a single dad. Well, he was, because I lived with him for a couple years when my mom was having problems. As a single dad, two things. Self-love. Model that. Show your kids when you have them, if you have them all the time, or if you have them on the weekend, what self-love looks like.
Mm.
And then I would say number
one. Especially for boys, right?
Because
you got two sons. You got two sons.
Practice self-love, whether that's how you get your hair cut, you working out,
dancing,
you going on dancing, whatever it is.
Cooking,
going on vacation, treat yourself. But the other thing that I think is even more important than that is how that single dad treats the baby mother or baby mothers.
Yeah, I get you.
A lot of friction, especially if there's courts involved with child support.
Yeah.
Dudes take it out on the mother when she should be working. She don't need this much money, bro. If you lay down with her and you drop something up in her, and God saw it fit. You 14 trillion and one chance that this baby's gonna be here, but some reason, out of all the joints you smacked down, she got pregnant.
Bro,
you know what I'm saying?
I mean, you and me on the same page with that. Mm-hmm. I don't fool around with the whole child support thing because I do believe you have a fiduciary responsibility to take care of your children. Like women are the vessels of life. I say it all the time.
Come on, man.
And we always have these conversations about, you know, men are equal to women. I don't think men and women are equal. There are certain things women can do that men cannot do.
100%.
Women can create life.
It's a lot.
You know what I'm saying?
It's a lot.
There's a greater aspect to that. So if you were when you were a part of creating that life that she is now the vessel for, you are responsible.
Yeah.
I don't care if she works, if she don't work.
Right.
If you were that concerned about whether she works or not, then you shouldn't have slept with her.
Fact.
You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
At this point, it's too late. The child is here.
Man up.
So, and that's just me. Now, some men will be like, that's fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you a simp. I hear that all the time. But the bottom line is that's your child now, bro.
It's definitely a kid.
You know what I'm saying?
It's your kid, bro. The thought of it, I created this, now I'm out.
I'm out.
Like, I don't know. I, yeah.
And the reason I'm out is because the child's the courts are in my business or my baby mom's a thought, so I'm gonna be mad, disrespectful. Nah, if you a single dad, to switch question.
Your kids,
yeah. You gotta honor that baby mom. I don't care if she's a stripper 7 days a week,
agree,
bro.
I agree.
Treat her like a queen, especially in front of your kids.
And the sad thing is, if you treat her like a queen, no matter how much of a thought she is, because I got a homeboy that's dealing with like a crazy baby mother. Yeah. And from the time that he got her pregnant, I told him, I said, yo, it don't matter what she do, bro.
Yeah.
You're going to have to treat her like she's the queen, because she's going to be the vessel that brings your daughter into the world.
Yeah.
And he has. And she kind of out there, but he's continuing to do things the right way. He won't talk down to her. He won't be disrespectful. And I'm like, you got to, bro.
Yeah.
If you know, if you didn't want to deal with this, you should have never slept with her.
Yeah.
So, bro, that's... Something
to factor in when you're going to bed, guys.
Yes. Yes.
That ass, though.
Yes.
That's a real conversation. Bro, that's a whole nother conversation.
Ass. Yes.
About joints. I mean, let me not say joints. Let me be more... clean women that you sleep with. I think the thing is, guys, we end up a lot of times just sleeping with females and ladies just off rip. We just sleep with a bunch of them. When they look nice, we sleep with them sometime. Right. And if this looks good, but this don't look good, you know what? I might still do something with that. You know what I'm saying? So we have to get to the point now where it's not this. It's like, you know what? If I impregnate this lady, am I comfortable and am I going to be happy with the result of her bearing my kids
Absolutely.
And being together? Ask yourself that question.
That's maturity. That's maturity.
Real talk.
Maturity.
And if you feel like if she got pregnant, you would be completely okay with it, then my nigga, go ahead, strike away.
You know what's funny? Think about how much sex you wouldn't have. If you looked at a woman and said she wouldn't be a good mother, I'm out. You know what
bro,
I'm saying?
Numbers low.
I mean, unprotected sex.
Protected sex. Sometimes things happen.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can protect yourself.
Totally. But yeah, that's something like as I got older, obviously the 20-year-old me wasn't thinking like that. But as I got older, I started to implement that into my little vetting process in a sense. Like if I am sleeping with this lady, this beautiful lady, if she got pregnant and came to me and said, Bafo, I am pregnant. We have a kid. And I just want to lay this message on you. What would my response be if I was completely okay with that? I'd have to be okay with it, you know? Yep. Like, I'd have to be okay with that. So,
I second that. Guys, well, fellas, we are running out of... Well, no, we have run out of time. Jacob is trying to go home. Tribble is in the booth. Like, these dudes keep talking.
Yep.
So, I just want to let y'all know that I appreciate y'all. First and foremost, be sure to find us on social media. I'll do that afterwards. I appreciate y'all. Yeah. I really do. Typically, we do a moment of truth, but I feel like we've gotten so many moments of
the whole thing
from everyone. I hope y'all learned a lot today. Young ladies out there, I hope you've learned what the thought process is for us as men when we're going through that whole process of dating, where we are in our lives. Young men, I hope you learned. If you don't have a father figure, you can listen to this podcast and learn. And anyone in between, if you learned anything today, we appreciate you. Slick, Sir, Rob. I love y'all, man.
I love you back,
it's okay
bro,
for
too.
Us, too, as men to say we love each other, man.
I
love y'all.
All the time. I love y'all,
and
bro.
I appreciate y'all, man.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. So be sure to find us on social media at Deadass the Podcast. Go follow Kadeen I Am. Of course, I Am DeVal. Give y'all handles so people can know where to find y'all, man.
At Slick _ Naeem, NAIM.
Sir Baffo, SERBAFFO.
At Rob Davon, RobDavon on Insta.
I need to get y'all names before we get up out of here.
And once again, man, that's Deadass the Podcast. DEADASSTHEPODCAST. Follow Kadeen I Am and I Am DeVal. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Deadass.
Peace.
Deadass is a production of iHeartMedia Podcast Network and is produced by Denora Pena and Tribble. Follow the podcast on social media at Deadass the Podcast and never miss a thing.
You know that I feel like it's important to express yourself. You got to put your true self out there. And those classic Crocs, clogs, and sandals let you do that.
That's right. Between the rainbow of colors and the Jibbitz charms, you can create a unique look. And I mean literally, no one else will have shoes exactly like yours.
Hey, you know it doesn't get any more comfortable than the Croc clogs and sandals. They are just the perfect blend of comfort and creativity.
Visit Crocs.com to explore the latest styles and Jibbitz charms.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference.
That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule.
It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.